From Given, this is Purposing, the podcast that lifts the lid on how to run a truly purpose-driven business. I'm Becky Willen, and with the help of leaders at some of the world's most recognized brands, I'll be demystifying this often misunderstood topic into clear, actionable advice you can use in your own business. This week, I'm joined by Gareth Mead, Head of Corporate Affairs and Sustainability at Lipton Teas and Infusions, the world's largest tea company. Gareth is responsible for shaping how the business defines and delivers its sustainability ambitions. And with two decades of experience in corporate affairs, he's helped some of the world's biggest brands find their voice and their values. In this conversation, you'll hear how Lipton is rethinking the role of business in creating value for all, the realities of embedding positive social and environmental impact in a complex global system, and why the future of sustainable business depends on transparency and collaboration. But before all that, let's go back to where Gareth's story begins and how a journalist with a curiosity for people and systems found his way into purpose-driven leadership. Gareth's early career began not in business, but in storytelling at the BBC.
I was actually a BBC journalist for many years, and I loved being a BBC journalist. The variety of stories that you would cover, the unexpected nature of you don't know what's going to be on the agenda for the day, was fantastic. After so many years of doing that, actually I realized that I was interpreting the stories of others, but actually I wanted to contribute more to the creation of that story in the first place.
That shift took him into corporate communications, and soon after to Virgin Media, where he got an early taste of purpose in action.
For those who are older than me, they may remember there was two cable telecommunications businesses in the UK at the time. One was Telewest, one was NTL. They had literally bashed these two companies together, painted the walls red, called themselves Virgin Media, and then I joined. And I remember the very first time that I met with Richard, where he made me a cup of tea. And I'm not just saying that because I now work for a tea company. It stands out very clearly in my mind. He made me a cup of tea himself, and he made it in a mug, not a fancy cup. And I knew then from the start that we would get along very well.
Working alongside Richard Branson left a lasting impression about how leadership, purpose, and humanity connect.
Richard would always talk about the people that worked at the company and treating them best first. A view that if you look after your people will look after your customers, and your customers will look after your shareholders. And there are lots of great examples like random acts of kindness and the fun that was injected into working for a Virgin company, which really he lived and breathed.
Since then, Gareth has built a career around that same belief that purpose and profit can and must coexist. Now at Lipton Teas and Infusions, that philosophy finds a new home. One rooted in heritage, but focused firmly on the future.
Wherever I have worked over the last 2.5 decades, I think I've always worked with companies that have a strong sense of what that purpose is. And joining those two things, that strong sense of purpose and building, plus also a Brit's love of tea, has led me to Lipton Teas and Infusions, where, yes, we have 150-year history, but actually we're only 3 years old. A company cannot succeed in isolation. There is no success in a world that fails. Being at the heart of that change and driving progress can be so rewarding.
So Gareth, welcome to the show.
Oh, great to be speaking with you, Becky.
So I think most listeners will have heard of Lipton, but they might not know that Lipton Teas and Infusions is actually the name for a whole group of tea brands that make up the world's biggest tea company. What's the story behind the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So Lipton has become synonymous with tea over the years. I mean, it's got a 150-year history, but we shouldn't also forget that other British tea business, Brookbond. These were two separate companies competing on the global stage to really democratize tea drinking. Before then, it was really the drink that was for the elite, for people that had discretionary money, and it was not something that everyday people would be able to afford. And over the years, those companies changed, of course. They came together under the ownership of Unilever. They completed ownership of these two companies in the 1970s. And then it was a Unilever business for many years, right up until 2022. And in that year, Lipton Teas and Infusions was effectively born. It was separated from Unilever, became its own independent business. And today, we operate over 30 brands around the world. Of course, Lipton and Brooke Bond are two of them, but ones that your listeners may also be familiar with include PG Tips and Pucker in the UK, Tazo in the US, other brands like T2, and many more besides.
So, and at a corporate level, Lipton's purpose is to create value for tea-loving consumers, to workers in the fields, and everyone in between. This is a podcast about purpose. So where would you say Lipton is on the purpose journey? And what does that purpose statement really mean in practice?
I'm so glad you picked up on that, because actually creating value for all, I think, is more than a purpose. It's about how we do our business. Because our real purpose is actually a little bit different. Our real purpose is to ensure there's a great cup of tea for everyone. We are, at the heart of it, a tea company. We fundamentally believe that that cup of tea, yes, it should be enjoyable and accessible, but it also adds value to people's lives. There are some incredible botanical ingredients that go into these teas, which genuinely have an impact on people's well-being and health. And there's decades of science that backs that up. So you're not just drinking something that's nice, you're actually drinking something that's good for you. And so our purpose is to get that tea into as many hands as possible and to really help improve lives one sip at a time. We can't do that alone. And that's where, when you talk about creating value for all, it really infuses the thinking that we have as a business. We are completely dependent on nature. We are talking about ultimately botanical ingredients that are grown somewhere in the world. We therefore need to protect the planet in which we live on. And our botanical ingredients are also sourced by many, many millions of people, in fact, around the world, who are either pluckers or harvesters, who all contribute to getting that cup into your hand. So people and planet, and every step of the journey, all the way from the field to the cup, is important. And if we don't do that, we have no business.
And I think let's unpack a couple of those statements in a bit more detail, because the way that we talk about purpose is a management approach for profitably solving the problems of people and the planet. And as you've said, the Lipton approach, creating value for all, really needs to speak to that quite clearly, because the tea industry faces some quite big challenges around topics that are connected to that. So human rights, climate change, you can't live up to that purpose without really thinking about the role that you play in addressing those challenges. So can we start by unpacking some of those challenges in a bit more detail?
There was a phrase I heard several years ago in my career now, which has kind of stood by me, which is, there is no success in a world that fails. And I think that stands true for every business. But for Lipton Teas and Infusions, it's doubly so. Already you see the impact of climate change in many tea growing areas. In Kenya, the tea growing area is already a place where there is high amounts of rainfall and high amounts of hail as well. In recent years, severe weather events have increased both the scale and the ferocity of those hailstorms, and it can devastate crops. So the impact is already there. And when it comes to human rights, the sad reality of the tea industry is that there is a long track record of issues that have happened in how people are treated. We are talking about a crop that is grown in very remote areas of the world, a crop that is grown in conditions that are far from the scrutiny and far from the oversight that we would all expect and that we want. So as a company, we really need to double down on making sure that the standards that we would all expect are not just adhered to, but also make sense for the people on the ground, that they're being rewarded for the progress that you would want to see, and that where climate change is happening, we are there to help and be a partner to the journey and the transition that inevitably will need to happen.
And I think one of the, as you've said, I guess the reality of the tea industry is that these are not new challenges. And I think in some ways, they seem to be especially intransient. So I imagine that has something to do with the structure and the dynamics of the tea industry itself, not just the reality, I guess, of the geographies in which crops are grown. So is there something about the structure dynamics of the tea industry that make these challenges particularly difficult to solve?
I would go even a step further than that, which is to say there is actually something inherent in tea itself that creates a challenge. Because when we think about many of the commoditized products in which tea is often included in, tea is fundamentally different. A field growing tea can often have multiple harvests over the course of a year, and each one of those harvests can actually produce fundamentally different qualities of tea. Tea is actually a little bit more like a wine or a little bit more like a cheese in that there are artisans and craftspeople who go and test, and I've been part of some of these testings where they go through hundreds of sips of different blends of tea in a matter of minutes. It's an incredible process to watch. And they are selecting based on the inherent qualities of that particular batch of tea. What that means is that, unlike with many other commoditized products, tea is bought after it is produced, because you don't know what you're going to get. And broadly speaking, there are exceptions to this, but broadly speaking, a lot of it is therefore sold through auction as well. In other words, the global marketplace determines the price of that crop. And you're also competing with buyers from all around the world who have different expectations. I mean, the one thing about tea is that every culture has its own unique experience of what tea looks like. I mean, if you share a tea with someone, you know, a builder's tea like myself, someone in the UK, versus maybe a tea in Turkey or a tea in China, they're all fundamentally different experiences. And buyers will therefore pick and choose the tea that's right for their consumer. That mix means there's a lack of predictability, and it's actually why the tea industry doesn't have a futures market. It's not like many of the other commodities. Because of that, a lot of the ways that you would normally approach sustainability issues become a lot harder, because the best way to drive sustainability change is to partner with people and have certainty of supply and demand so that you can work together to make progress. And in fact, tea yields to this day are amongst the highest they've ever been. I mentioned some of the impact of climate change is having an effect on yields in localized areas, but on a global scale, there is more tea being produced than ever before. So you have inevitably downward pressures on prices, and at the same time, what you would normally expect to do to change ESG or sustainability-related dimensions aren't always there. And that's what makes tea both a fantastic challenge to crack, but also a complex challenge, which is taking time to deliver.
And it's fascinating because I guess just to drill into the impact of that complexity and sort of market dynamics on investment in sustainability, I guess because of that lack of predictability from one year to the next, you may have very different buyers buying from a particular estate. And because of the global nature of tea, there may be businesses in certain markets that place a high value on sustainability, and there will be buyers who frankly don't. And I can imagine that removes the incentive for a lot of tea growers to really invest in sustainability if they don't know that those investments are going to be valued by the buyers, because they don't know who the buyers are at the time.
If you look at where tea ends up, and I'm going to focus just for a moment on East Africa, because it is the largest export region in the world for tea. You know, everyone talks about all the tea in China and tea from India, etc. They are definitely the largest producers of tea globally, but a lot of that is consumed and drunk in those markets. So when it comes to export markets, it's really East Africa. And a lot of the tea that people enjoy in the UK and in many Western markets actually originates from places like Kenya. When you look at the list of where that tea ends up, the top 10 is not a list of Western countries. In fact, the only one that is the UK. But otherwise, we're talking of countries like Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Russia. These are countries who love tea and they love it in their distinct ways, but their priorities may not necessarily be the same priorities as what certainly Lipton Teas Infusions would want to have. You know, Lipton Teas Infusions may be the world's largest tea business, but we're actually only 4% of all of the tea that's sold in the global market. So you can imagine the complexity and the power that a company like Lipton Teas Infusions, or even collectively the tea industry in the UK or Europe or even just the Western Hemisphere, actually can exert on that. And I think that realization has suddenly become very apparent when you have a combination of a challenging economic environment for everyone, and where what we would hope to change is under pressure. And that's the reality of the market that exists today.
And I guess as an example of that playing out, the Kenyan government recently advised tea producers to actually stop working with the Rainforest Alliance, so the organization that sort of certifies tea growers to sustainability standards, because it said that the cost involved didn't make sense for farmers. So I guess as an organization that really does value sustainability, what's your take on that decision and the impact of that decision?
I have so much sympathy for farmers who are investing in their business, in their fields and their people, who expect and hope to receive a reward for that investment. They should do. They should all want that. Yet the reality is something like roughly 95% of all the tea that's grown in Kenya is Rainforest Alliance certified, but a fraction, and I'm talking less than a fifth of that, actually ends up in markets that insist upon some form of certification, whether it's Rainforest Alliance or another. Many of the issues that we see today stem from the fact that there is very little reward and too much risk associated with this one-size-fits-all approach, often historically determined by Western organizations without necessarily listening to the farmers. And over time, that's exacerbated this challenge where there isn't progress. There isn't the progress that we would want to see at a industry-wide level. And there is great work being done by lots of companies to try and change that for their own value chains. One of the things that I'm most concerned about is that you reach a point where the complexity of the supply chain means you start making choices to work with fewer and fewer producers. And we've seen that. There is a tea brand in the UK that was working with 300 different farms, and they chose to only work with three. I have no doubt that those three farms they are working with are now in a much better place because of the scrutiny and the oversight that that can give. But what about the other 297? I have almost on a daily basis this dilemma of how do we ensure that we are both delivering upon what we want, which is improved standards in human rights, improved environmental protections, and at the same time ensuring that when we are working with farmers, we can do it at scale.
Are there the beginnings of a different kind of approach that's emerging to tackle some of these really intransient, almost foundational challenges in the very kind of nature of the product and the structure of the market? Where might we find some optimism?
I see it a little bit like waves at the seashore. And as the tide is coming in, you will get a wave and it will reach further up the shore than ever before, and then it will recess. And then another wave will come in and it will go that little bit further. If you look at the longer term trends within tea, there has been tremendous progress that's been made over the past decade or maybe even longer. We are at a moment now because of the overproduction of tea compared to the demand that's there today, and because of global economic forces, there are challenges which have meant that we are at a difficult point in time. But I do think those tides will continue to push further forward and will continue to raise progress. If I look back over the way that regulations have developed over the years, it has been the case where Europe has often led the way, and people may think, well, is there going to be a regression now because of what's happening in certain parts of the world, like the US, for example? But then you look at countries like Singapore, or you look at China, and actually they're introducing higher standards and better regulation because they recognize there needs to be change. So we're talking about tea, but actually this applies to the entire food and drink industry, where after decades of focusing on how much can we produce, we recognize actually now there are still far too many people that don't have enough food to eat, where actually there are far too many people that have too much food to eat, that this industrialization of our food production chain is not sustainable for the planet or for people, and change will happen. It may not be at the pace we want, and it may end up seeing some backward steps along the way, but I'm optimistic that there is a positive future ahead.
There is some optimism there, but let's get practical. What might that actually look like, you know, on the ground in somewhere like Kenya?
I think the old days of a single imposed standard coming from the West and insisting on everyone producing to that standard are falling away. And instead, a more collaborative way of working with producers to determine what are the right things that we should be focusing on. There is not a single farmer of any size that I've spoken to over the last few years who have ever said they're not interested in protecting their fields, in protecting the land that they work on, or looking after the people, because they need workers. There is not a farmer out there who doesn't want to do these things, but they either don't know how or they don't have the means in which to do it in. So working with them to understand, you know, where the blockers are, where the barriers are to that, and moving perhaps away from a more binary pass or fail approach to one where we acknowledge where there are issues and we work together on those issues. So think rather like a progressive scorecard rather than a pass or fail. And also working with farmers to acknowledge where there are gaps, where there are problems, rather than hiding it under the carpet. Actually acknowledge maybe we're not where we are, where we want to be today. In Kenya specifically, where you have so much tea going to countries where, as it stands today, there is a belief, I'm not sure I fully subscribe to this, but a belief that the most important thing is the quality of the tea, and the environmental concerns and the human rights issues are of lesser importance. By the way, I think that's changing, but if that's our belief today, let's have a framework that accounts for that and allows them to buy tea under those frameworks, but at the same time allows for those of us who want to make a point of differentiation that actually the people are respected, that we are making progress on our carbon footprint and so on and so forth, to be able to still buy and make a point of distinction on that without overcomplicating it for farmers. If there is genuine goodwill and acknowledgement that we can work together to drive progress, I think that sort of framework can help in creating the differentiation, trying to break some of that commoditization that we've seen in the tea sector for years, and allow consumers to make choices based on their values, based on what brands stand for as well.
Let's get into the detail of how you're managing sustainability at Lipton. And you set out a sustainability strategy last year. How does that address some of the challenges that we've been talking about? And how's implementation going? Because there's a big difference between having a strategy that looks good and makes sense on a page and the reality of actually delivering it in the business.
When we created our sustainability strategy, it was very important for me to ensure that it was intertwined with our commercial strategy, because our ambition is really to unlock the true value of tea within a generation. That's how we describe our sustainability strategy. When you go to your local supermarket and you pick up a box of tea, the typical price of a tea bag is just a few pence. That's a consequence of the commoditization, which has ensured that we can all get a cheap cup of tea, but it's not sustainable in the long run. So how do we encourage people to recognize the true value of tea? And this connection between sustainability and the commercial reality of our business all comes back to how do we create advocacy for tea? How do we encourage people to recognize it's more than just something nice to drink, but adds real value to their lives, such that they value the changes that we want to see in the entire value chain? So we have this three-pillared approach, the first of which is around ensuring that we're serving healthier and tastier teas. What does that mean in practice? It means investing in farms, investing in better quality blends, and frankly, pricing for it, with a belief that people will pay for quality. And sometimes that can be quite difficult from a commercial point of view, because it will take time for people to adjust to that. But nevertheless, it is super important, because it's only through that that we can ensure that the other two pillars of the strategy become true. So from an environmental point of view, we're already starting from a very good place. if you think of what tea is, it's literally taking leaves off of a plant, drying it, packing it, and ensuring it gets to you in good condition. The carbon footprint is very low, but that's still something we can improve upon. So investing in our own operations, a pursuit of renewable energy everywhere, and bearing in mind some of the countries in which we operate in, that can be tough. We're talking about countries such as, for example, Pakistan, which are still heavily reliant on fossil fuels from a grid perspective, from a national infrastructure point of view. So how do we ensure that our processing facilities are running on renewable energy in places like this, for example? And how can we ensure that we're helping farmers to really drive progress on the ground for them? Over 75% of our entire carbon footprint comes from the farms themselves. And so our role here is, how can we ensure that farmers have the skills and the capabilities to make a difference on the ground? That's the second pillar. And the third of which is to look at the people aspect of this, because frankly, there would be no tea if there were not people involved in its harvesting. And we have a North Star in this, which is to ensure there's a living wage throughout the value chain. That is a challenge that we talked about within a generation. People may have a lot of scrutiny around that. Why is it so difficult to ensure that everyone throughout the value chain is paid a living wage much sooner than that? And again, it comes back to the intrinsic challenges of tea. Because you do not know where that tea is going to end up, you don't know whether that worker has contributed to your tea until after the effect. And given the vast majority of tea goes to countries where maybe they don't have the same ambition as us, can you expect UK consumers or Western consumers to subsidize that cup of tea to make sure that the worker is always paid the right of money? And there are ways that we are working, especially collaboratively with other tea brands, to build a system whereby it's calculated how much time people have spent in contributing to a cup of tea that ends up on the shelf under our name or under anyone else's name, and ensure they are recompensed accordingly. But it's quite complicated, as you can hear, and that requires collaboration. So underneath all of these three pillars comes really this belief that we can't do it alone. We might be the largest tea company in the world, but we're actually very small in the grand scheme of the tea industry. So we need to work together with like-minded companies. And a belief that ultimately a lot of this comes back to training and education. If there is a belief that I hold, and which Lipton Teas Infusions hold, that there is too much tea being produced today in the world, how can we shift from a mindset of producing quantity to a mindset of shifting to quality? And in terms of how we're implementing it, I mean, as you mentioned in your question, we literally began this journey a year or so ago. We're already making good strides in terms of our environmental footprint. The reduction since our baseline year in 2021 has been a 32% reduction in carbon emissions, which is fantastic. But arguably, that was the easy stuff. The hard stuff is now to come. And from a human rights point of view, we have been working with an organization called IDH and many other UK-based tea brands on this collection and redistribution system, which has seen tens of thousands of families in East Africa and in other parts of the world too, benefit from this calculation of understanding how much they've contributed to the tea that ends up in retail stores in the West.
I'm so pleased that you focused on the relationship between the commercial strategy for the business and the sustainability strategy. It doesn't exist in all organizations. So what does that mean for how you make decisions? What does that look like in conversations around the boardroom table?
We have a very, I think, special situation where we are owned by a private equity business called CVC. And there may be many of the listeners to this who have an idea or an expectation of what that means to be owned by private equity. And I have sympathy for that. But I think for us, we're in a very fortunate place. CVC considers sustainability as one of the drivers of valuation. And therefore, recognizing that they have a finite period of time in which they will own this business, and they want to pass it on to someone and, of course, benefit from the scale of the business as we grow. But also that sustainability sometimes takes longer to realize. It's not something that you can automatically draw onto the bottom line. Having that value
from CVC, having that imperative that it is one of the drivers of valuation, makes it a lot easier to have those conversations throughout the organization. We also come from a world in which, although it was before 2022, we were part of Unilever for many decades. And there are people in this company who have spent most of their working lives in the tea business or at Unilever before coming across to the new business of Lipton Teas and Infusions. For them, they have spent many years working for an organization that has loudly trumpeted its environmental credentials, its sustainability agenda. I think having that combination of almost from the ground up and from the board down is met with the reality that if we ignore these issues, then the business would suffer anyway. We cannot ignore nature. We are literally talking about botanical ingredients, and we are talking about botanical ingredients that are very dependent on humans to grow and cultivate and harvest those. So in some respects, I think it's not even a battle. It's not a challenge that you may well otherwise have expected. That's not to say it's easy. I mean, the issues themselves are incredibly complex. We talk about, from a sustainability strategy point of view, having an impact in a generation. That is a time at which I would assume that there will be new owners for this business. We've just welcomed a new CEO in Mark Boussain, who's joined us from Heineken after 30 years there. He's now brewing tea instead of brewing beer. There is a point of continuity here. The business remains what the business does, and the values that we have all the way through the organization remain very true. So the flavor may change, the emphasis may change, but the values and this belief in creating value for all is forever.
So I know that the strategy sets out an ambition that will take a generation to deliver, but thinking slightly shorter term, where would you love to see things in 5 years' time? You know, not just from a Lipton perspective, but where would you love to see the tea industry in 5 years' time when it comes to purpose, sustainability, and social impact?
I would love everyone listening to this, but also elsewhere, to really recognize that that cup of tea is worth more. I think if we can achieve that, then I'm not saying the other issues disappear, they certainly don't, but it will fundamentally change how tea is grown, how tea is produced, and how we are enjoying it. I know we cannot crack the environmental and the social issues within 5 years. But if we have a common collective recognition that that tea is worth more than a couple of pence, then I think we're going to be in a positive trajectory.
Gareth, thank you for being such a brilliant guest on Purposing. Thanks again to Gareth. I loved that conversation. So here are a few things that I've taken away. It's great that tea is no longer a drink only for the elite. But we have chased quantity over quality, and this has driven down international tea prices in real terms over the last 30 years. No wonder sustainability has been deprioritised by tea growers. Now, this is clearly a problem that no single organisation, business, or even country can solve on their own. Collaboration has to be part of the answer. But so is the need for new models where values meet value and where power dynamics across the supply chain are redrawn. And perhaps we're seeing the beginning of this already. Since we recorded this episode, the Kenyan government has lifted its suspension of Rainforest Alliance certification activities in tea. And it's been reported that financial viability and co-creation were key to this resolution. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you'd like more practical advice on building a purpose-driven business with brilliant insights from people like Gareth, download the Insider's Guide to Purpose at givenagency.com/thinking.